It's midday. It's Saturday, the 22nd of August. We should be on probably match day three if this was a normal football season, but clearly it isn't. The lads have been back in training and they had their first meaningful friendly of the day of the pre-season yesterday against Cheltenham. But Dave Fevs with me as usual. Ian's going to be joining us. Stanley as well, if they can work out the technical side. In fact,
Stanley has just joined.
Stanley is in the room. And Steve, there's another guy called Steve. He's offered to join in. I'll just say yes on there as well. So here we go. So they should all work out how to log in. You've been doing it for ages, so you know how to do that. 4-0 against Cheltenham, Dave Fevs. Any thoughts on that performance? Yeah? What were your thoughts there?
I guess for a performance, we've only really seen, you know, the goals highlight, so can't read too much into that. I guess the things coming out from that appear to be that it's 5-3-2 from the shape. Gregor posted a nice little picture yesterday showing that shape in all its glory, and I think from the highlights you saw that as well. So looks like that's the way Holden's going to go, which is what he intimated in the Radio Bristol interview a week or so ago. So that's encouraging. I think from a result-wise, 4-0, great. Hat-trick for Wells, one for Vyman. I think clean sheet, never to be dismissed in a pre-season friendly, or builds confidence, I think. I think if we look at the lineup that was out there, the back five won't be a million miles away from what we start with, and plus a goalkeeper. I expect Taylor Moore is probably vying for that right centre-back position instead of Zach Viner. The two guys up front, I guess you perm them with Famara Giju at the moment, depending on whether he's staying or not. And then I think the three midfielders was probably the slight surprise. But I think when we learned that there was another practice game going on later in the day up at Phelan, I think that was more of a let's get some minutes into people's legs. And although I think, you know, the reports coming out that Backinson had a really tidy game in there, I think the recent signing of Joe Williams is probably not going to change that opinion, that it's probably not going to be a regular starter for us. But yeah, encouraging, I think.
I think what you said there about the midfield being the surprise. And let's bring in from OSIB for the first time, Stanley, welcome. Welcome to our merry band. You've got Jesus, I'm a Technophobe on there. That sounds like some West Coast American pop group or something. Stanley, what were your thoughts on that lineup? The midfield was a real surprise, wasn't it, how that lined up there?
Yeah, it was slightly odd.
I don't know if that's why he started. Maybe Joe Williams wasn't ready. Maybe he hadn't trained long enough. I mean, it's a friendly, really, isn't it? A bit worried that the Portsmouth game's been cancelled. I wonder where we're going to get our sort of pre-season minutes from now. Maybe we don't need as many as I think, because it's such a short period. But I like Masengo. I don't think Eliasson's a central midfielder though. That weirded me out a little bit. I know he was playing out wide, but I do wonder if he's one of a few wingers that are going to miss out on lots of minutes really under this new formation.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Viner getting in the back through the central back three, he sort of made that place his own towards the end of the end of last season, didn't he? You know, when he's really come to the fore in the last couple of months, hasn't he, under Dean?
I like Zach Viner really. He's had a strange couple of seasons, hasn't he, really? I remember reading such rave reviews when he was at Plymouth. They absolutely adored him. And that was playing centre-back, you know, in a League One team that narrowly missed out on the playoffs. Got young player of the season, if I'm not mistaken. And then he had, you know, the loan to Rotherham where he was sort of basically playing as a centre-back, but on the right of a back four, because Rotherham was so defensive and getting battered every week. I remember watching the Brentford highlights one game where I just felt sorry for him. And then he went to Aberdeen and was almost playing central midfield due to injuries, and suddenly he's not in the discussion as a potential starter with his City career, really. But no, I like him. I think I'd probably put Taylor Moore ahead of him, really. I think Taylor Moore's probably a little bit more sound defensively. Viner's great on the ball, but every now and then he gets skinned or he makes a mistake and you think, maybe that's a clear weakness in a back five.
Yeah, I think he's a really... Sorry, I was just going to add
Yeah, carry on, Dave. Yeah, carry on.
I think you're right. You know, a bit like Taylor Moore in the first half of the season, where, you know, there were probably some doubts going into the season as to whether he was championship ready. Taylor Moore certainly got better and better, and certainly by the time he went surprisingly out on loan, I don't think there were many fans doubting that he was you know, championship capable. So that was, you know, couldn't do any more than that in my eyes. And I think Viner's had a similar impact in those last 5, 6, 7, 8 games under a combination of Lee Johnson and Dean Holden, in terms of kind of pushing himself into the fore and showing that actually there's a reasonable player in there. He wouldn't be first choice for me, but I wouldn't have any qualms about him being one of the centre back cover, or potentially even, you know, if we don't have that much money to spend, possibly be able to play a right wing back as well.
I mean, you'd rather he or Taylor Moore play than we brought another Ashley Williams, or we brought in another Filip Benkovic, though, if we're meant to be a team promoting the pathway. I hope that signings like that are sort of a thing of the past, really, personally.
Yeah, you could have, as you say, you could have Viner playing maybe on that right wing back with Taylor Moore in, because he was a surprise exclusion, I thought, because this has to be a big season for Taylor Moore. Let me bring in Steve, a first-time visitor. If you're there, Steve, it says you're connected. I mean, 4-0, you still got to put the ball in the back of the net 4 times, keep a clean sheet. Doesn't matter who the opposition are, you still have to do that. Any thoughts from you on the lineup that Dean put out against the Robins from up the M5, Steve?
Good afternoon, gents. I'll try and sort of avoid points that people have already made. Just one thought on Eliasson. You break the lines out wide, you create chances. You break the lines in the middle of the pitch, I know it's a gamble, but you really do open up sides. The other one I was going to throw in was the interesting comment from Naki Wells on the post-match interview, where he made a real point about Andreas Weimann, how Weimann adapts his game to make the best out of Wells, which sums Andreas Weimann up to me. Fair play to him. And I just wonder whether that might be a sort of a thought in certainly Naki Wells' mind.
Yeah, Steve, just on that, I made a similar point on OTIB this morning about exactly that. That, you know, it was quite a glowing reference of Andreas Weimann. And I know they didn't partner each other too many times last season when he joined, but the couple of times they did play together, and I think Fulham at home was one of those games, I saw the kind of movement and interchange between them that kind of bodes well. But then, you know, I think going back to maybe the Derby game, I thought Pham and Wells linked quite well in that game as well. But I think if we're going to play that high press from the front, Weimann's got to be a pretty strong candidate to play in there, I would have thought. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
He's personally, I think he's totally undervalued by a large amount of our fans, Dave, and I know we've got a lot of similar thoughts. But ultimately, they're two internationals, for lower nations, and Andreas Weimann's predominantly an athlete, more so than he's played at the top level, and so is Naki Wells. I think those two have got a reasonable chance of actually understanding each other.
Well said.
Yeah, I mean, Naki Wells certainly seems to be playing with a smile on his face. He didn't seem to look too happy. Do you think that we might see a better Naki Wells in the coming season, Stanley? You know, a different mindset. You know, his goal scoring record towards the end of the season was sound, but, you know, he didn't seem 100% happy, did he, some of the time?
Yeah, there were a few accusations towards him, weren't there, of sort of, does he really want to be here? Is he working that hard? Which I thought were a bit overzealous and a bit too soon, really. I think he's just not that sort of player. He's the opposite to Weimann in a lot of ways, isn't he? Sort of Naki Wells, when he was playing well at QPR, was up front on his own, sort of just waiting for chances, just sort of, you know, walk about and then suddenly wait for that Eze to get the ball and he'd make a run and finish it. Whereas Weimann's the opposite. He does sort of everything but score, doesn't he, in some games, although, you know, he did it right under Holden. I hope so. I mean, I think he's got some crazy goals per shot ratio or something. Like, he's the number one in the whole championship for shot conversion. So if we can be a team that's going to be high pressing, like Dean Holden said, and creating lots of chances and playing the ball forward as fast as possible, I think if I was Naki Wells, I'd be rubbing my hands with optimism, really. And I think it is interesting, isn't it, hearing Naki Wells talk about Weimann. You do wonder, I think, if all the City players who play in the opposition third had to put their sort of favourite player to play with. I imagine Vine would be near the top of that list just because he does everything, doesn't he? You know, he'll press for you, he'll run for you, he'll chase balls down. And I think in Vine and Jeju, we've got two strikers there who are very selfless in their work. You know, if it's Jeju heading the ball away or holding the ball up and winning fouls, or if it's Vyman, you know, breaking the lines and running and pressing and doing all that sort of, you know, work that no one else wants to do, maybe you can't have two of them in a team. Maybe you need one selfless player and then a selfish player like Naki Wells, either if it's Wells and Pham up top or Wells and Vyman up top, which I think is slightly more likely, like Dave said.
Yeah, I think just that whole thing that you've talked about there in terms of partnerships, whether that be up front, whether it be centre back, whether it be combinations in midfield, I think that's going to be the key this season. Yeah. Is building partnerships, and I see it being very much a kind of team rather than it's, you know, let's get the ball wide to Eliasson on the right and hope he creates something. I think it's going to be a very different way of playing this season. I think once again, just going back to the goal highlights yesterday, I think there was a pretty early ball from Eliasson. Which had picked out Wells' run. There was another one from Backinson that picked out a Wells' run for, I think it was his second goal, maybe his hat-trick goal. And then I think, you know, the thing that kind of epitomised it for me was the fourth goal where Jack Hunt picked the ball up kind of quite deep in his half, took a couple of strides forward and then released Wells really early. And I've been saying for ages, Wells makes so many early runs, and if you can pick him, that's when he gets his 4 or 5 yards free, and that's when he's at his most dangerous. It might not always be in the penalty area. It might be that link-up that he showed for Vyman as well. So I think, you know, it bodes well looking at it against a League Two side, who aren't a bad League Two side, by the way.
No, so, they missed out on the... Well, they're in the playoff final, weren't they? So as you say, they're not too bad, and it's decent opposition. It's not like it was, Manor Farm or something like that, you know, and they were playing against those guys. No disrespect down there. Now, has any of you guys got an insight into what the lineup was for the other game up at Phelan that was played immediately after? Because those players that we've just been referring to played a straight 90 minutes. But any of you have any idea what that lineup was up there? Because I'll go through the players that were available. But has anybody got an informed chat before I start talking about that?
If we're playing our own teams, then it doesn't really matter because everyone will be playing because it's two of our own teams. It wasn't an external team coming in and playing in a lineup we've picked. It was basically everyone taking on ourselves. If you know what I mean?
Two kind of mixed.
Was it everybody else?
And first team. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe there was one strong team and one weak team, and that could be quite interesting. But I don't know that. But what we do know is that presumably everyone was involved.
The formation would have been interesting if we could have found out, wouldn't it?
Well, and it'd be in an interesting formation, though, because when you look at it, OK, O'Leary was up there and I think he's young enough to have one season as a recognised number two rather than go out on loan and maybe just keep Woollacott and have a backup goalkeeper as Woollacott. And we've still got René Gilmartin, although I don't know whether he fits in as a coach when we've got Pat Mountain as the official goalkeeping coach. But the only recognised defender up there was Taylor Moore. Now, Tommy Rowe is sort of substitute left back, but it was more. And then we get onto this area of the field where we just seem to have a surfeit of numbers rather than, I'll say, talent. But if you look at the midfielders who are up there, Rowe has played midfield for us, Casey Palmer, Callum O'Dowda, Sammy Sesmodix, Adam Nagy, Liam Walsh, Patterson, new signing Joe Williams, and Morel. That is strength in depth, or is it numbers or quality, Dave? What do you say about that? And do some of these players need to move on? Particularly, you know, when you look at, I mean, any three of those could drop in and replace Backinson, Masengo, and Eliasson and offer something different. But you, Dave, first of all, what do you think?
Yeah, I think on the face of it, it does look like we've got too many in there. But I think we've got a long way to go towards the end of the transfer window. And I think, you know, I guess my starting gambit on the friendly was around people like Backinson, who it's quite likely that he might get a League One loan. And I think, you know, yesterday might have been a good opportunity to show what he's got. But I guess everyone's got the opportunity to put pressure on the on the new head coach that there were of either place. But I think throughout those opening weeks of the season, we'll talk about those first 10 games later on, but certainly I think we've got five or six before the window closes, including Cup. And I think we'll know a lot more about it at the end of that. And we'll even understand whether someone who, you know, Dean Holden thought was going to play suddenly falls by the wayside as well. So we don't know that. But I think we've got a long way to go yet. And you know, we've heard over the weekend people like Mari Watkins, not necessarily a midfielder, certainly not a central midfielder in the roles we're talking about.
But yeah, Mari's supposed to be going to Aberdeen, isn't he? So
and it wouldn't surprise me if we hear some more for some of the other players as well. So I think we just kind of show a bit of patience around that and let these few 90-minute friendlies that they're going to try and manufacture over the next week or so, just prepare them and see where we go.
Stanley, it's surprising that Masengo got a full 90 minutes. Okay, again, it was only a friendly, but he didn't seem to feature at all under Dean Holden. Could you see Masengo being a player that goes out on loan? And yesterday, him in the starting lineup for a strong 11 was a bit of a red herring. But Stanley, could you see him going out on loan? He's still not even 20 yet, is he?
You know what? I predicted on the podcast maybe, I don't know, halfway through the season, once sort of Masengo was, you know, sort of taken out the side by Lee Johnson, that in the summer, Lee Johnson could easily say, oh, he needs a run of 30-40 games, so we've got to loan him out because I won't give him to that like open Morrell and Walsh and everyone else. And I think, whose fault is it that he's not getting a run of 30 games? Is it yours, Lee Johnson? Because you keep signing all these midfielders and then learning out the ones that previously you thought were great. Then we had in January saying, well, I'd love a Morrell or a Walsh type. Anyway, Masengo, no, I don't think he'll go out on loan. I think we're playing a formation where there's quite a bit of fluidity. There's quite a few central midfielders in the team. You know, even if you've got two up front, you know, there's sort of three positions where lots of players could fit in. You know, you could have Masengo, Walsh and Williams, or Williams, Morrell and Walsh, or you can bring Masengo on, or Palmer, or Schmodics, or Patterson if you want to go more attacking, or take them on if you want to go more defensive. This is going to be a mental season with the amount of games and how thick and fast they're going to come. And midfielders with this sort of high-pressing, fast-moving game, they're probably going to be the ones doing all the running, really. So I wouldn't be surprised. I personally think Masengo will stick around. To be honest, think we'll see most of our midfielders stick around, really. If anyone's going to go out online, I'd probably say Schmodics, but maybe he's not part of this sort of true central midfielder discussion here. But yeah. Masengo, no, I think he'll stay around.
Steve, what are your thoughts on Masengo? Because when he started that first few games last season, he looked what he was, a breath of fresh air, looking to go forward. And then it was almost like he seemed to be more and more oppressed and less effective as the season went on until he didn't feature at all. Steve, what are your thoughts on Masengo's prospects for the coming season?
I definitely keep him, Dave. What better coaches, really, at his age to have around than Simpson and Downing? I also think that if we're not expecting him to play Saturday, Tuesday, we'll see a better Masengo. I think if you could mix it up, as sort of Stanley's indicated, with Morrell and Williams and rotate them a little bit, I think we'll see the best of Masengo. My one worry across the midfield generally is they're all on the edge of the diving board, and in Dave Fev's normal ways, it's sink or swim time for each of them, really, right from Palmer through to Masengo. They could all go one way or the other, really. Personally, I'd offload Palmer, and I'd even consider offloading Nage, but you might want to keep one of those.
Well, that's another.
Just want to add.
I mean, this bit somebody mentioned. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I think one of the things we need to bear in mind with Masengo last season is he's come to us as, you know, just 18, new country, you know, new style of football. Championship's pretty unforgiving, and I think there's a massive kind of change that you have to go from, you know, playing predominantly age group football to playing the cut and thrust of Championship football at a time when your body's still developing as well. And, you know, and certainly Hanoi, we've seen since he's come back from COVID, he's put some bulk on as well. And that's probably a bit of a necessity to be able to cope with the rigours of playing lots of times in the Championship. And I think that playing games regularly, training hard to try and build yourself up, it probably took its toll probably around Christmas just after. And I think he's just had a bit of a leveling out, really. But, you know, those early games were really encouraging. I think there's, you know, his time will come, and I'm sure he'll play a part this season as well.
Yeah, this word rotation came in, and there was an interesting thread on OTIB this week talking, and somebody, the original poster, I think, said, no midfielder should be playing over 40 games in a season. Remember how slow Pack looked towards the end of the high press season. And somebody countered that and gave a whole list of midfielders who played 40-plus games last season. And you look at these players, and they were all the type of player that we've been lacking. And I'll pick extracts from the list. Clich at Leeds, 45. Ben Watson, I think that is 45. Livermore, 45. Klukas, 44. Mowat at Barnsley, 44. The infamous Bannon, 44. De Silva, I think that's the De Silva at Brentford, 42. Sawyers at West Brom, 42. Bellingham, the starlet at Birmingham City, 41. Bakuna, 41. Kearney at Fulham, 39. And Joe Williams, 38. Any of those players that I've mentioned there would probably slot, and one of them has, Joe Williams, straight in and, you know, missing no more than half a dozen games. So having that anchor, be it pushing forward or defensive or creative, every side's got one. And we're noticeable in our absence on that statistic. What do you say to that, Dave? You know, this rotation, yes, but maybe we did it too much. The Tombola was out too often last season.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I would imagine we haven't signed Williams to rotate him every other game. He's going to play, you know, assuming he plays well, he's going to play the vast majority of games. Yeah. And I think, you know, the other slots are up for grabs. I think the key thing is that you rest them at the right times. And, you know, if it's for someone like Joe Williams, you might actually get your rest by not being on international duty. So, you know, I don't think he's going to make the full Indian squad at his age. So, you know, it's about managing the weight load on those players. And even, you know, someone like, let's take a Joe Morrell, even if you've got 15, 18 first-team games out of him this season, that's his kind of breakthrough season. And then you go from there. I think, you know, no one's expecting Joe to play 40 games this season. Sorry, Joe Morrell, that is. So I think we just have to have different expectations of players and not see someone like a Walsh or a Morrell not playing 30-plus games as being failure on their part. I think, you know, this is a step-up playing in the Championship. And I think we just have to different
expectations. But Joe Morrell's 24. So when's his breakthrough? You've got kids at higher level breaking through 3 years younger than him. I mean, Stanley, if you had to pick now, and say there could be a hell of a lot happening on the transfer front between now and the opening fixture, but looking at the players that we've got playing in a 3-5-2 or whichever way you want to put it, what would your starting midfield be? And, you know, Williams has to be one of those, right? But what would your starting midfield be in the opening game at home at Coventry? Stanley, what do you think?
Oh, that's tough. You put me on the spot there. I've just
given the choice.
This talk of players playing over 30 games or 40 games, we're forgetting Josh Brownhill, mind, because if he hadn't gone to Burnley, he easily would have hit 40 games for us, yeah. I'm pretty sure. And he was playing 90 minutes every week. And even with the Burnley appearances, he's up to like 38. Despite not playing in their like four of his first five there. So he was our Calvin Phillips, wasn't he? He was our
Sawyers, whoever you want to compare him to.
That was the player that we had.
Yeah.
And now he's gone. Maybe Williams will replace him in that sense. I mean, we talk about Joe Morrell being 24. Yeah. I mean, look, the reason he hasn't... I'm always cautious to go after Lee Johnson. I think he's done a lot of good stuff and some questionable stuff. But there are players of that age that simply should have played more games for Bristol City by now. I mean, you think of all the sort of bigging up that Mark Ashton and Lee Johnson did of Joe Morrell when he signed that new contract. How many league appearances has Joe Morrell made for Bristol City over his career? One. He's made one appearance when he came off the bench to replace an injured Liam Walsh away to Ipswich, and he hasn't played since. Marlon Pack played 46 games that season and was pretty poor near the back end of that season, clearly needed to be replaced or at least subbed off with 20 minutes to go. It didn't happen, despite Joe Morrell being someone that apparently Lee Johnson really rated and always saw as a player. In terms of my rant, that's over. In terms of my starting three, I'd probably go with, I think it would, Williams probably has to start, doesn't he? And then I'd go, do you know what? I'm not sure people are going to like this, but I'd go for Williams, Walsh and Morrell, to be honest. There you go. How's that?
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Steve, what do you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, to be fair, Stanley. I mean, and Dave's made some good points as well. I don't think we're talking about changing, rotating literally the three and changing two out the three every week. I think you're going to have a base, as we said, is I would expect Joe Williams to play virtually the whole season. And then the other two places, maybe one might get snatched up by somebody and the other one maybe a bit more of a rotation. I think they're all slightly different too. Masengo, Dave's touched on the physical development. And the only thing I'd say, Stanley, with all these youngsters, they've got to be ready to play. Whatever age that is, if it's 18, play them. If you have to wait till 22 because they've had to develop as a player or physical, play them then. And that's the judgment call, I think.
Yeah. Dave, what are your thoughts, Dave? Dave Fevers, your thoughts on the midfield?
First game of the season, I would go with, obviously, Joe Williams. I'd really be tempted to play Joe Morrell. Because I think he just gives you real legs in there as well. But I think the player I play as the third one in game one is Jamie Patterson.
Yeah, because he did quite well towards the end of the season, didn't he? In that final nine games run. Would you agree with that, Stanley? That Pato is still very much in contention on a week-to-week basis for the starting lineup, or do you think he starts to become a bit more fringe now that we've brought Williams in and Morrell and Walsh? If they don't make it this season, they might as well move on. What are your thoughts, Stanley, on that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have Patterson written down, really, so maybe I might pretend that you misheard me and I meant to say Jamie Patterson. My there. I do think that he was sort of... I do love Jamie Patterson. He was excellent. I do wonder if him and Walsh should... going to be wanting the same role in this sort of team. If there is such a thing. I mean, maybe it is going to be like crazy fluid and everyone's going to be all over the place in a good way. And you could have Walsh and Patterson. But Patterson are good, did he? But again, you do wonder, why did we loan him out in the first place? Why did we sign Palmer for $4 million and get all these players in when suddenly, come January, Jamie Patterson is back and he's the Messiah? Who's making these decisions? I don't like being too mean up to Lee Johnson. I'm sure he's upset a lot of people. He hasn't particularly upset me in many ways. But there are just so many signings where you think, why do that? Why let him out and bring him in?
Why?
You could do that with Joe Morrell and Liam Walsh. Joe Morrell and Liam Walsh for Marcus Henriksen, Taylor Moore for Ashley Williams / Filip Benkovic. I'm going on a rant. Sorry, I'm meant to be the happy dapper here. Patterson, I think he'd be good.
You're being very open. You're welcome. Welcome to this non-happy clappy type environment. I mean, players, I mean, it's interesting you said there, he let Patterson go out on loan and then he signed Sesmotic, Nash and Palmer. And how much did those three cost when he let that one guy go out? And we've said numerous times on this podcast that we seem to have, you know, five players of a 10 grand a week salary level rather than three good ones, because two names conspicuous by their absence in our conversation so far is Casey Palmer and Callum O'Dowda. You know, I mean, if Eliasson does go, then O'Dowda becomes a natural fast left winger, but can you see Casey Palmer playing much next season, Dave Fevs?
I think he's fallen behind Jamie Patterson in the pecking order, and it's up to him to, you know, show the manager that he's worthy of a place. And I think it's Patterson's shirt to lose at the moment. If we play with that type of player in that midfield three, I think it was Harry on OTIP yesterday was talking very much about, and kind of certainly matches my view, is that I think we're a bit too keen to talk about DMs and CAMs and things like that. We've got a group of midfielders who have got a range of abilities that you can blend them in any way you like. So I think Patterson's got to come in and show that he's worthy of a place. And if he gets in off the bench, he's got to go and show that he's worthy of a start, if that's the case. But Patterson's got a drop in form, first of all, assuming he's picked. I just want to go back to kind of Stanley's point on Joe Morrell. That season when he broke through, when I think he made his debut away at Ipswich, and then he played a few of the FA Cup games. At the time, he was about to go out on loan, but because Corey Smith injury, he didn't, and he stayed behind. And you thought, well, that's okay. He's going to be featured in the 18 every week. He did not. Once the window closed, he did not feature in the match day 18 at all for the rest of the season, which just seemed an absolute kind of crazy situation, really. It was almost like, yeah, we want you to stay behind, Joe. We don't want you to go out on loan, but and now we're not going to pick you. And that seems a very strange thing. So I think I'm hoping Dean Holden is going to have a much more fair selection policy. If you play well, you stay in. If you don't play well, you don't. And I think that's what we need.
I mean, if we look at players, I'm going to say two names here, that if they left on loan or they were sold, it wouldn't deplete the squad. And we could strengthen in areas where we are weak. And Ian's joined us in the studio. I'm going to say that if Adam Nadge was transferred and Sam Smezmodix maybe went to Peterborough, those two went out, we would not need, when you look at the strength that we've got in depth in midfield, if Nash and Sesmodix went in, we would not need to replace either of them in that midfield setup. Would you agree with that, Ian?
Well, I think, Dave, that we've got 12 midfield players, and clearly if there was a deal on for Sammy Smodix to go to Peterborough in a kind of exchange deal for Ivan Toney, then I'd be quite happy to see him move on. But to be honest, we haven't really seen enough of Walsh, Morrell, Smodix. None of them have had what I'd call a fair chance in a Bristol City shirt. And one of the things that Dean Holden's got to make up his mind about is firstly the formation. I'm not a big fan of Patterson and Voigtman in midfield because I think it makes us too weak defensively. Assuming we've bought Williams because we're going to play him, I'd like to see two proper midfield players in there and two strikers. Then you start wondering about what you're going to do with Patterson, Voigtman and all the other lads, so that you've got, what do you do with the tens? Do you play with a 10 at all? Or do you just have a more or less flat three in midfield and create from that and make sure that your wing backs get lots of crosses in, because that's what you'd need to do. And whilst Hunt can do it, Jay De Silva struggles with his crossing.
No, you're right. Absolutely. You're right. And Hunt, we highlighted in our last podcast, as possibly being one of the weaker links that's out there. I mean, Stanley, Pham's situation, he's not back in training yet. Is he back on Monday or is it the Monday after? I don't know. Do you think Pham will be a Bristol City player when the season starts? But Stan, do you think Pham will be a City player when the season gets underway?
I do think he'll end up leaving by the time the window is shut, to be honest. Well, I think the window goes on for a few games, doesn't it? Not to be a pedant or anything, but I think by the time the window
shuts... Yeah, 16th of October, I think. Yeah, you're right. That's
there
right.
You go, which is a shame, really. I, you know what's been really nice is seeing the change slowly of the general perception of Pham, really. I think people have finally started to cotton on to what a great job he does up front. You know, I think people maybe they just watch the highlights, or they only remember the one miss, you know, that he did. But I think finally there's sort of been this sort of like this sense of what a great job he does in our own box defensively, how hard he works. You know, I think always think that with Voigtman, it's always very clear how hard he works because you can see him running from A to B. That's very hard to miss. Whereas with Jeju, you don't really see the sort of the tussles. Yeah. You forget the headers from his own box. You just remember that he's standing there. Is he working as hard as Voigtman? And if he does go, I think what's nice is, you know, how, in my opinion, how in unison the Bristol City fans are now in their appreciation for Pham. And I guess that's highlighted in the fact he won player of the season.
Yeah, no, he's on his game and he looks to be in good physical shape as well, because he's one of the likely outgoings. Steve, do you think, I mean, it was rumoured that Eliasson was going to go off to Roma or Celtic. You know, I mean, if he went, that's going to raise money, yeah? And natural replacements for Eliasson is O'Dowda. I'm assuming Adelakin's going to go. what about Johnny Smith as well? But, you know, our two outgoings, do you think it will be Pham and Eliasson, or do you see anybody else that might surprise us? And we've already touched on Watkins going to Aberdeen. Steve, what's your thoughts on the outgoings and where it wouldn't make too much difference if they went?
I think with the two, Eliasson and Famara, I think it will literally depend on whether probably a foreign club come in with a reasonable offer, and I think we have to accept on both. I think they're probably both looking to go. I mean, that is literally dependent on the market. I don't think either are irreplaceable. On a personal basis, I'd be more than happy to get most of my money back on Casey Palmer and possibly Adam Nagy. The good thing I do think with Dean, I think quietly he's got probably a inner ruthless streak that he's probably already shown in terms of the Corey Smith and Jamie McAllister decisions. And I don't think he'll be like Lee, where he'll keep all his options open. I think he will make decisions.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at this, is an unbalanced squad in some respects, because let's assume Pham and Eliasson were to go. Yeah, we've got Wells and Wyman up front. If we're going to finish anything above halfway, you know, you've got to have two strikers that are going to get between them 40 goals. Yeah. And Wells and Wyman are capable of doing that. But if they get injured, the fullback situation, if Pham and Eliasson go, is Freddie Hines and Semenyo. So I think it was you said, Ian, earlier, they do need a forward up front if Pham and Eliasson go. A big money signing, don't they, to just boost the goal power of the team?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got to be honest, I disagree with you on Wyman in Wales getting 40 goals in a season. I really, you know, if that happens, you can have my house.
No, that was what the front two should get. And at the moment, they're the only recognised goal scorers, right? If you look at league goal scorers in their careers, they're not going to get 40. They're not going to get 40, but...
No, we're in violent agreement here, Dave. I mean, we lost to Phoebe, so if we needed him last season, then we need another striker now. If Pham goes, we need two, one of whom needs to be more of a what I would call a typical classic centre forward. In other words, a big bloke, somebody 6'3", and it can head the ball and it can hold the ball up. Because unless we're going to go for a total football, slick passing, two smaller guys up front, get the wide players pushed on, that type of thing. Unless we're going to go for that, we will finish up playing the ball long at some time. And you need someone who can hold it up and compete. And I think that's an area where we've fallen down in the past in not having that player. I don't like using that awful phrase, clubs in the bag. But you need players that can offer a threat in different ways. So against a packed defence, sometimes an aerial threat is going to do it. And on, for example, if we lose Eliasson, we're going to lose 15 assists. And if say, Jack Hunt doesn't play, and Jack Hunt's another one who's out of contract in a year, as is Jamie Patterson, as is Wyman, as is Nathan Baker. If we lose Hunt, that's another 9 or 10 assists gone. So I look at our side and I think, okay, where are the goals and assists going to come from in our team? And at the moment, I'm not 100% confident in it.
No, I'd agree. Fev, so I saw you commented on one of the transfer threads on OTIB this morning. We're being linked with a 27-year-old Frenchman, 112 appearances for Charlton, Nabi Sarr. I guess we do need to bring somebody in to the who can play in that back five, either at right side. You know, Taylor Moore's there, but you know he's the only defensive cover we've got at the moment on that right side, isn't he? I mean, do you know anything about this Charlton player at all that's being mentioned, or is that just spurious press talk?
I think it might be a schoolboy on Twitter starring it off, but you know we'll give him the benefit of the doubt for the moment. It's not a player I've seen loads of. I've seen him a couple of times against City in the odd live game. He's a big old unit. He's about 6'5". And I think it's quite telling that in a in Charlton's YouTube video, the only thing you actually see of him is scoring goals. So actually, he does get his head on the board on the other end of the box. But I haven't seen anything of him defensively that says he's an upgrade on any of our three starters. So, you know, I think on the forum today we're talking about, oh, you know, he played instead of Baker on the left-hand side of the three. I wouldn't put him above Baker. But, you know, I haven't seen much of him. Other people might have a different view. I think there are other candidates that we should be going to look at. I know Matt Clark looks like he's going to Derby, so we might have to rule that out. I'm sure there are other options over there. I wouldn't be totally surprised if Benkovic still happens. I know there was this interest from Russia, but that doesn't seem to have materialised. So I think just, once again, a bit of patience here. I don't think Naby Sarr from Charlton or ex-Charlton is the answer, but you know, I'm happy if other people have got a different view on it.
Yeah. Well, look, the fixtures came out. It's 3 weeks today that the league season starts. We've got Exeter a fortnight today in the Caribou Cup. I guess, you know, that should be a win for City. Would we be surprised if they went out in the first round? Not really. But then the games don't come particularly. If we did get knocked out, it's a nice soft lead into the season. Now, I said to Ian and Fevs, and I'm sure Stanley, we could be put on the spot as well if we ask. But the question here is the opening 10 games, right? What does good look like? And I posed a question, or I made a statement, 14 points. And that was a 3-5-2 or a 4-2-4. That's not lineups. That's sequence of games to get that. And I went through those opening 10. And I don't think I was brutal, but I could only get to 13. Now, so each of you, I'll start with Stanley. What does good look like for Dean Holden the opening 10 games? You know, is 14, 15 enough or what? What do you think?
Oh, God. I think anything less than 33 and he's got to go. No, I'm only joking. Just briefly, I will give him an answer, I promise. Just briefly, yeah. On Naby Sarr, I have seen him play. I don't know if anyone watched the playoff final where he backpassed it into his own goal from 35 yards out. Did anyone see that? No?
I remember that.
Anyway, moving on. What does good look like for Dean Holden? To be honest, I know Gary Johnson was always quite obsessed, wasn't he, with his first 10 games and how that always gives a true reflection of the league table. I want to see a clear style from Dean Holden. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a clear change in the way we're playing football, or at least some stability and consistency in the way we're playing football. In terms of how many points or where we are, I'm not that fussed about points. I'd like to see us, you know, top 10, and even top half, to be honest, I'd be all right with, as long as we're playing a nice brand of exciting football, the signings we've made have bedded in well, and we're being entertained. I'm not going to get that hung up, to be honest, about points.
No, Steve, what do you think? What are your... I've jumped this one on you because you didn't know I was going to... You know, sort of say, well, how many points on the first 10? I don't know if you've got the fixture list there in front of you, but, you know, what does good look like in pure points terms, yeah, in your book?
I thought Sandy made a good point there about, and Brentford, proof of the pudding, the season just gone, getting the shape, style and solidity, if you like, is important. But your question, anything, if he could hit 15... or somewhere close to around there, 14, 15, 16, you're not far off playoff spot, are you? If you can do that, rebuilding a new side in a new tenure, you'd have to say that would be a more than solid start. But I agree with Stanley. I'd like to see his plan more than worry about how many points on the board.
Interesting. Fevs, your thoughts. What's the first 10 look like? I've done my predictions here, which I say I put 14 as acceptable, but I got the 13. But Fevs, where, you know, and all the sides, the squads aren't settled yet, so it's a little bit academic, but, you know, the fixtures are there. You have five home, five away, as you'd expect. How many points did you top?
I didn't get past Exeter in the League Cup because I'm really boring. take one game at a time. I spent a bit of time yesterday actually looking at the respective squads and transfers in and out, and I think, you know, Norwich look like they've done some good business But I think, like the others, that kind of clear, I don't want to use the word identity, even though I just have, but, you know, clear style and intent on how we're going to play is just as important. But I think, you know, it'd be really good if you can get off to a good start. And I think if we can be sat there round about mid-table, just in the top half, I think that'll be absolutely fine. So that 14, 15 points, I quite like to see us improve home, even if that means away form goes down a bit.
I'd agree with that. I think a lot of fans. Would,
so you know, if we ended like up, you know, getting
a lot 10, of fans would like point, to see better home
10 points from our first five home games, but only four or five from the away games. I'd probably take that. You know, so different way of looking at it, I guess. But I think, you know, some sides have made quite a few signings, but not many people have made any real decent signings for us to look at that and go, cool, they're gonna bomb it this season. You know, they're gonna absolutely fly and they're gonna win it. You know, there's not a Leeds in this division or a West Brom this year. Norwich probably look like they might be all right, in terms of they look like they're recruiting quite well. But there's a big expectation that some of their players might go as well before the end of the window. And then you've got that settling in period as well. So I think I'm quite open. Yeah, 14, 15 points.
Well, that's it. We have got an extended window.
Dean Holden would be pretty happy with that, I would have thought.
What are your thoughts on that, Ian? Oh, no, Ian's disappeared. I mean, Ian's dropped out somewhere. Send out a search party for it. I mean, I looked, and you can't predict, but I'm going to do it anyway. I say Coventry at home, win. Stoke away, because I think they're going to be a threat with Michael O'Neill at the helm, lose. Wednesday at home, win. Forest away, lose. Then we got the first international break. Barnsley away, draw. Beat Neil Warnock at home. Draw against Swansea. Lose at Bournemouth. Draw at home against Huddersfield. Draw at home against Norwich, rather. An away point at Huddersfield. And that gave us 13 points, you know. And I think we'd be happy with that, because that would have us at about 12th. Talking about fixtures and what have you, guys, I mean, when do you think we're going to be allowed back in? Steve, when do you think we're going to be able to go back in through the turnstiles at Ashton Gate in an ideal world?
It's complete guessing it, Dave. I would say after Christmas at the earliest, I have to be honest. I got a very good friend in the quite high up in the NHS and very intelligent, and she thinks this will be going on, the general problem, for at least another 12 months. Now, how much the government push and allow the football to bend and test it out, I certainly shan't be going in the near future for a number of reasons. But my guess, Dave, for the general fan is possibly towards or after Christmas.
Yeah, Stanley, I know you've been in watching from the gantry for a lot of the games towards the end of last season, but do you think beginning of October for restricted crowds at Ashton Gate with suitable social distancing, or do you think that's a bit of a pipe dream?
I don't know, to be honest. I think whatever happens, there aren't going to be enough fans in the stadium, really. So, to be honest, I think I'm just, until everyone's allowed in, really, or almost everyone's allowed in, that's the marker that I'm looking out for, really. When it's dribs and drabs, yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure people will be so excited to get in. But until it's back to, you know, close or something that resembles normality, I'm not really going to get too excited about. But you are right. I mean, not to sort of, you know, rub everyone's nose in it, but I was very fortunate, really, that City invited me in to be a part of their coverage and watch the game from the gantry, really. I took it for granted until I think later that evening, really, when I got home and sort of sat down and just realised that there's probably millions of football fans, really, you know, around the world that haven't been able to watch their club or watch their team and have had to settle for the television if they're so fortunate. And so to be a part of that and just watch, you know, like a pretty mundane game, really, against Preston, you know, the sort of game that you'd forget pretty soon in a week's time, you know. There's a bit of shouting at the referee, a couple of simple goals, some fouls, not too many shots on target. And it wasn't until afterwards that I thought, actually, you know what? I'm quite fortunate there to be able to watch that sort of mundaneness, really, and be able to...
Could I jump in with a question on that, Stanley?
Yeah, go on.
What was your experience? Was it anywhere near any great enjoyment compared to watching in a half-full, three-quarters-full, two-thirds-full stadium? Because it's great to be able to see the live action rather than on the screen, but the fact no real fan interaction experience or anything like that. Interested in your experience of it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It was slightly odd. I mean, I can't remember what the first game was off the top of my head. I can't remember. But anyway, it almost felt like I wasn't watching my team in some ways, because it was the players, you know, it was the same hairstyles, the same physique, the same shirts on the back, same names on the back of the shirt, rather. But it didn't feel like I was watching my team. You know, it felt like I was watching, you know, an academy game, really, or a youth game. There was the fake crowd noise, which sounded hyper-realistic. There was still, you know, the cheers from, you know, John Lansdowne or whoever was in the sort of the fancy seats in the middle, and the players who were clapping when people went off. But it was a little bit surreal, really. Still very enjoyable. You know, I used to watch the academy games when they were at Ashton Gate, and absolutely adored doing that. So it's still watching a game of football. You know, I haven't watched a game of football down the park, you know, so even to watch a bit of sport live was amazing. But it was a bit eerie. There was still that sense that, like, this isn't the normal product that we know and love. Even though when the goals went in,
of course you were. There's that sense of detachment. I watched all the games on TV, and I've watched a reasonable amount of football on TV as well. And, you know, sometimes you can forget about the crowd, but then there's other games where it's really bad. I was chatting to Jonathan Pearce this week, and we all know Jonathan, and he said he hadn't enjoyed commentating at the games without the stadium, but without the stadiums being full, because he said it's just like it's a very inert environment. Fevs, you know, when do you think we'll get back in? Do you think, as I think Beard has commented, he said first game home against Swansea, which is towards the end of October. Do you think that's realistic, or do you think, as Steve has said, we might have to wait until the new year?
If it is that early, I think it's going to be pretty small numbers. It's going to be kind of test event style numbers, I would expect. I guess from my point of view, I've not really thought too much about it, because I guess, you know, with Joe, we'll probably be one of the last to go back in. We'll be probably watching it on Robin's TV for a while. I was going to ask Stanley as well what he thought about the actual situation. The place where they do the Robins TV from, because that's like three or four seats from where we sit, so it's a pretty good view. And that's the one thing I miss about watching it on TV, is being able to see the whole pitch, because you miss so much just watching it on that middle 30 yards of the pitch. So I was going to ask you what you thought about the view from A4, which is where we sit on a regular basis.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I joked, I think, to Lisa Knights that, oh yeah, thanks for being invited, but, you know, did you have to stick me in the corner? But no, it was good. I hate watching football on the side. It feels like I'm watching a game of tennis sometimes. If it's too fast, I get crooked necks. I'm always behind the goal. You know, I want to be squinting down the other end and being like, has that gone in? I don't know what's going on. And then someone screams and you go with it. And then, you know, you get it right down your end. And my first season ticket at the age of 9 was in the Atio, you know, and it's always felt you were sort of like breathing the team down towards you in the second half, you know, so many late goals under Danny Wilson. And it's not quite the same in the South Stand, but I always like being
back in. You're back in. Sorry.
Dave, can I just do a quickie? On the points, after 10 games, I want 18 points. Because I want to go somewhere. We just sacked a bloke for being bang average, and now we want to be bang average and play a bit of nicer football. Well, I think you all lot sound like you want to be bang average.
No, we don't. I mean, we don't want to be in. I think what we're saying is we're just.
Well, I'll say 30 points. Realistic. Then. Go on. I want
30 points. For you.
Yeah, and if anyone doesn't want that, that's not good enough.
31. No,
they're not bang. What I'm saying is, we just sacked a bloke who can do everything we've just asked for, and would have done. He'd have got 13 points, 14 points for his 10 games. So why bother to change? My point is, why bother to change? 18 points, and you're on target for the playoffs. And I think with the squad that we've got, and the squad that hopefully we will have, that's where we need to be. But I think if you set your stall out as, well, you know, let's be mediocre, you're going to finish up being mediocre. And for me, 18 points with the money we spent, the squad we got, is what we should be doing.
Surely you aim for 30 in, but I think we're just being realistic that he's having to rebuild slightly or sort out the squad that Lee Johnson left, with possibly a couple of departures. And he's also, let's be honest, to be fair to him, he's new in the head coach role with two new coaches. So, no doubt he'll be aiming for probably 21 points or something.
This is what you have to realise about Dean is after a global search taking 6 weeks, he is the finest available coach in the world.
They didn't say that, Ian, did they?
What don't you guys see about that? He's the best available coach in the world, or out of the hundreds.
You've got to put a rider on that sentence there, because this is fundamental. This is fundamental. He is the best available coach from amongst those that were interviewed, which wasn't that many, that was prepared to work with within the structure
but we had
imposed
well, no,
by
hang
the
on,
club.
Dave. Wait a minute. Whoa. You don't know that. That's something you're saying. You don't know that he was the only one or the best one to work under of that structure. A lot of others might have said, yeah, I'll work under that structure. It's great. We don't know. But what I'm saying is he's the best available coach in after a global search, because that's what Mark Ashton said. He publicly said, we've had hundreds of... applications. And so if we've got people... They did. That's what the bloke said. And Dean Oldham, who was already in BS3, in fact, we'd employed him, was the best available bloke. So why are we... And I don't really accept the point about rebuilding the squad, because we've only had a few players leave. And
I think what we need to add on top of that, Ian, is... So we're talking about what do we think is a reasonable start for the fixtures we've got, and we've given our opinions. The thing we have to understand is that that's the first bunch of 10 games. What we've typically had in Lee Johnson's reign is a group of 10 games or 8 games where we've picked up bugger all. And that's what's effectively cost us. So what I think a few of us are saying is actually we might just have a kind of slow, gradual build some momentum under Dean Holder. What we can't afford to do is have another 9 games like we had under Lee Johnson. Post and pre-COVID, where we picked up 2 points, that's what cost us. If we'd have picked up 13 or 14 points in those 9 games, we'd have been in the playoffs. And that's the mindset we need to change. I go back to 14-15 season when we dominated that division in a 5-game spell. Do you know what our lowest points total was in those 5 games? It was 6 points. We never did worse than 2 wins in 5 games at any point that season. All the other teams, your Prestons, your MK Dons, they all had periods of 5 games where they didn't win any of those 5 games, where they either picked up 2 points or 1 point. And that's what we really need to see here, is that kind of momentum building, that ingraining of the system that stops us going on those stupid runs where Lee ended up picking a different team every week, or picking the players that aren't performing. And that's really what we're trying to see out of this. You know, I think all of us would love to see us get off to a flying start of, you know, 6 wins, couple of draws, couple of defeats, 20 points and be right up there. And who knows, we might do. I'm looking at the squad. No one's made any great inroads in the transfer market in this window yet. Still a bit of time to go. And I think we're just giving an opinion at this point in time.
No, I agree. And that business of getting points on the board early, we did that in Tammy Abraham. So we did it the Tammy Abraham season, and then we did it the High Press season. Season after, less so. Last season wasn't so bad. And then we've consistently fallen away. Even the Tammy Abraham season, when we lost 5-0 at Preston and I was at Brentford when we were rubbish, right?
Yeah.
The season petered out. So... You know, I think I take your point, Ian, that we all want us to get 18, but realistically, we look at it and we're just being slightly conservative. Our expectations have been lowered by the appointment. And if Steve Lansdowne had said, when he got rid of Lee Johnson, Lee's taken us as far as we can, but with COVID, we're going to have a period of consolidation. We're going to give it to Dean Holden. He's going to bring in a couple of new coaches as well. But 2021 season is consolidation. There wouldn't have been half the grief given to him and half the anger.
Even though you've said 2021 season, a season of consolidation, I still don't see that. My expectation, even from having Dean Holden in there, is that we're going to challenge for the playoffs. I see no reason why we shouldn't be. I just think we might have to gradually build that momentum up.
Yeah.
Find out what those, you know, you don't find your ultimate combination sat on the training ground. They happen on match days, and there's not probably one manager, probably Bielsa might be the exception to the rule here, that set out his side in the first game of last season, and probably it stayed pretty much the same all the way through the season. You know, and that's pretty rare. Most managers go into a pre-season, they have all these ideas about this is the way we're going to play in this formation, and by about week six, they've thrown it in the bin. And that's what I'm really hoping Dean Holden doesn't do. It's 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, whichever way you want to say it, in whichever combination, and we find those players that fit the roles and those pairings and partnerships that build us.
Ian, did you see the bit about Brentford and their start to last season and their analysis of it?
I know how many points they got last season in their first 10 games. What was that? By the way, if you want to know.
No, I didn't see that, mate.
Basically, what they were saying, Ian, is when they had a poor start, didn't they, to last season? First 10 games, I forget what their points tally was, but we'd be going up the wall. But their analytics department had looked at each of those games and convinced, obviously, the coaching staff that they were absolutely on the right track, and that if they stuck with what they were doing, that long term they would benefit. And, all right, they just somehow messed it up at the end. But that's what I'm looking for, that build that chemistry, build the system, trim the squad, sort out the, get everything in place, and gradually go forward like a gradually accelerating car, hopefully.
Yeah, great. I like that. I love that, a gradually accelerating car. I'm just on a big banner, shouldn't we, and put it down Aston Gate. Brentford got 12 points in the first 10 games last season, and I wonder if you can draw parallels between Thomas Frank sort of taking over, working out what he needed to do, what he needed to tweak, what he needed to change, and Dean Holden taking over. I mean, we got 17 points last season. Maybe Ian would have been buzzing with that and gone, wow, we're great. Brentford are shite. And coming in this season would have been the opposite, wouldn't it? I mean, I'm not that fussed about points. As long as we're, you know, even to be honest, if we're top half after 10 points, I would be content.
I think the point about consistency is a good one. And if you can build up slowly and consistently, and I think... what's happened other seasons, for some obscure reason, and I'm not exactly sure you can put a finger on it, whether it was fitness, whether it was injuries, is we tended to do okay up to Christmas. Mm-hmm. And the best example of that was that defeat at Wolves, and then followed very closely by hiding at Villa. And then we seemed to go backwards, apart from the cup games, ever since. And I think once a slide has got into the players' minds and it started, I think it's very difficult to unravel that and get it out of players' heads, particularly if you've got primarily the same players playing. And I wouldn't want to get that. I mean, I want to see good football. I want to see more wins at home and all those things as well, because I think that's one of the things that probably cost Lee his job. If he'd have won 3 or 4 more home games last season, I think he'd still be there.
I think you're right. Guys, we're going just into an hour, coming up to an hour and 10. One final point I want to discuss. We've got a new shirt sponsor. If I was their marketing team, I'd say, hey, you've come up with the same logo that the Daily Mail icon's got on my phone app. But Mansion Bet, should we take the moral high ground as supporters and say we don't really want to be associated with the gaming industry in this day and age? Stanley, I'll come to you first on that. It's, you know, it's money at the end of the day, and they're a higher profile betting company. I've never heard of Dunder, but I've heard of Mansion before. But do you think we're sending out the right message having another betting company as our sponsor? Well, maybe it should have been Blackthorn, one of the drinks down here, for maybe slightly less, but sends out a better social message. Stanley, your thoughts?
Well, they're going to get phased out in a few years. So why is that happening? Why are they being phased out? I don't really like it. I don't want it. I like the Swansea have got their university on their shirt. It's easy for me to say because I'm not the one that has to run the club and get in money, but I hate this idea of, oh, they pay the most, that they get it in. It reminds me of when Eddie Hearn was asked about the Anthony Joshua fight in Saudi Arabia, you know, a kingdom where being gay is illegal. People are stoned. People are crucified. That's how they put Steph Steele, is crucified. And Eddie Hearn sort of was like, well, you know, it's a great opportunity. What a lovely amount of money we're getting, essentially. And the reporter said, what about North Korea? And he said, well, if they pay enough money, as sort of some sort of quip. So I don't agree with that. I don't like it, but the club have to get money. Also, the fact that some people are saying, oh, what a shame, Manchester, but how disgusting. We should have alcohol as our sponsor. Where's the sense in that?
Yeah. Steve, similar thoughts from you?
Very simple for me, Dave. Within limits, take the most money you can. I'm a smoker, but I wouldn't have cigarette advertising. Betting, you can't listen to the radio or watch a single episode of anything on Sky without being absolutely bombarded with Sky with betting adverts. In the whole scheme of things, for us to do it, I have to say, if the offer is good for betting, I take it.
Yeah. Fevs, your thoughts on that, on sponsorship? Yeah,
I've sat here with my laptop and my iPad open and with the fixtures on them, and we've got Mansion Bet at the bottom right, and next to it we've got Sky Bet Championship. So, you know, we're kind of the whole league has got a sponsor with betting company. It doesn't particularly sit very easy with me. I think, you know, there are more moral sponsors we could have. I don't know if anyone saw the mock-up kit that someone did last week. I know you did, Ian, because you commented on my tweet, which had Children's Hospice Southwest as the sponsor. And I made a fairly throwaway comment.
Oh, was that the black-shirted third kit that somebody came up with?
What a statement that would make. We saw last year with kind of Paddy Power and I think it was Huddersfield, and I know it's a betting company, just kind of ignore that for the moment, where they actually went with a sponsorless shirt, didn't they? You know, it was all basically Paddy Power made their money out of the whole hype around it. So, you know, and I kind of flippantly said to Ian on Twitter that maybe Steve Lansdowne could be the shirt sponsor, pay his fair market rate for sponsorship of a kit, and stick Children's Hospice Southwest on the front. You know, that would have been utopia for me, but, you know, we're in the world of greedy football, so it ain't gonna happen.
I'd have loved to have been the guy that went to Steve Lansdowne and said, Steve, you know, we're gonna lose $8 million this year, yeah. You couldn't give us another $500,000 for the shirt, could you? I'd have loved to have heard that conversation.
If he'd have picked me up in his helicopter and flew me over to Guernsey to chat about it, I'd have done it, Ian.
Yeah. I tell you what, I'd have flown you over there as well. That'd be just worth it.
Just briefly, guys. Sorry, I know I sort of took up a whole minute of this little topic with a rant. And this might be the first time that I've mentioned the gas on a City podcast for a long time. But I don't know if you guys know how they used to do their sponsor. I think when they were in the National League or League Two, they did a big raffle. So you could basically buy raffle tickets for their. And so they sold thousands. There were local companies. There were big businesses. And the winner, the people that won to be the sponsor of their shirt for a year was the Sportsman Pub, which is essentially like their version of the Robins or the Three Lions. And so for a season, this amazing promotion season when they got back into the league or into League One, I can't remember which one it was, the local pub was the sponsor of their shirt.
If he was so inclined to, Fevs, could under FFP, could Steve Lansdowne do that?
I don't see.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I believe all you're constrained is that it has to be at a fair market rate.
Right.
So, you know, if I had £500,000 spare to sponsor shirts, I could do that, and I could put whatever I wanted on the front of the shirt as long as it's, you know, fits within
on that Rovers thing. I heard that raffle raised $3,000.
Minus the cost of the book of tickets.
It's very good. Stan, it's a good point, Stan. Rovers did it. I can remember about 15 years ago, for some reason, I was down at Yeovil and they'd done exactly the same thing, you know. And it's like there's an ad for £1 million house on television at the moment, you know, where you know, if you get 50,000 people put £2 each in or £20 each, you've raised your money. Do you know what I mean? It's a good way of doing it. I don't know how much I've got no idea, because another one, it's an undisclosed sum, I'm sure, for Bristol City, but how much an average shirt sponsorship is in the Championship. Fevs, anybody got any ideas what average is?
I've rumoured that Lancer Scott was something like about $250,000 when they did it, but once again, that's no real knowledgeable source.
I think
Dunder to buy them out must have been at least $500,000, if not more.
And the yeah. Rovers, Stanley, the actual winners, they had to change it and change plans, was Babe Station. And they had to redraw it. That's why the sportsman built it.
I was just thinking, I love this idea of a million-pound house. Like we could always do that and then buy another Marley Watkins to never play, couldn't we?
Yeah, that's right. And plus the wages. I'd like to, on the shirt, I think betting companies at the moment, one of the reasons that they sponsor so many things is they're the only people with money. And if you look at the industry I'm in, construction, every construction company I know is the first thing they've done is cancelled all their advertising and sponsorships. They've just stopped and got rid of it. And whether they were sponsoring...
And I think that's the only reason why the Premier League...
And as for universities, you can also question the morals of a university spending money on advertising, can't you?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, by the fees they charge. No, it's interesting. I mean, somebody mentioned the gas. It's the first time we've had the gas mentioned on there, and there's nothing wrong with that because I'm not a gas hater. There seems to be a bit going on over there at the moment. They've signed a few players. They've cleared their debts. I mean, do you think...
They got a chance.
This is a heretic question, but do you think they're a threat in League One next season? Do you think they've got their act together?
Well, the lad they signed from Coventry, we were linked to him at one point.
That's what made me say. That's what made me say.
Last season, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Westbrook.
That's the fella. And we were linked with him at one point last season. So. You know, I don't know. I don't honestly take a lot of note. The only other thing I got into a conversation the other day with my brother-in-law, who is a gashead, and we were talking about building the ground down at the fruit market. We were talking about what happened when Steve Lansdowne tried to, you know, with all the money he's got, build a new ground. And, you know, we had every kind of reason in the world why we can't build it. So I just said to him, you know, good luck with it. But I still don't quite know where the funding would come from to build that. But I don't know enough about it. So please, if anybody knows, tweet me and tell me.
Well, there we go. Guys, it's been a great session. Stanley, thanks for coming on and joining us. You know, it's been really good to have you on. I think you said in the when you reached out to me, it'd be good not to have to be in the chair, but you've made a valuable contribution. Steve, you've been in all the time for the first time, so welcome to you. Dave Fevs, as always, thanks to him. I think he's gone off and got his dinner now. And Ian, your little rant on the 18 points, that's worthy of listening to it again as well. I mean, we'll have another one before the season starts. I've got part two of In Conversation with Phil Tockle to put out there. But guys, enjoy the rest of your Saturdays without football. Thanks a lot for coming in. It's been a really good session. All the best.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
Thanks, Dave.
Cheers, bye-bye. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye. All the best. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye-bye.